Now the fun begins.
Bridget.
Stop! You violated the law.
Welcome back to another episode of the Game Pass Gamecast, your weekly go-to podcast for all things Xbox, Xbox Game Pass, and of course PC gaming, including news, rumors, and conversations around them damn good video games. You can catch new episodes of the show when they drop each and every Friday morning on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, all other major podcast services, wherever you get a podcast at. We're probably there. If we're not, let me know. But we're more chances than not, we're probably there. So be sure to subscribe to us, rate us, review us, all that jazz. Interact with us in any way possible. You know the whole deal by now, wherever you get a podcast at. And of course, on top of that, I wouldn't be a shill for the show. I mean, I guess I'm the host, but you get what I'm saying. Follow us on Twitter at GPGC Podcast. Stay up to date with everything regarding the show, video games alike, and our dope giveaways. I'm your host, as always, Travis White, a.k.a. Travelus, on most internet platforms. Joining me, as always, the thoughts and sounds in my head. What is going on? It's just me. It's just me this week. There was a scheduling snafu that kind of put both Mike and I in a little bit of a pickle. So it is just us two this week. I told you it'd be back to normal, and I promised it would be, and it will be. A little bit of change of plans on Mike's end for very, very good reasons. So we are riding solo this weekend. I didn't have enough time to find a guest. That's just sometimes how it goes. This is some inside baseball shit, man. We've been doing this show for 166 episodes straight, 166 weeks straight, something like that, even more. You get the point, though. We've been doing this for a long fucking time, man. So, point being, you know, you just roll with it. You make it happen. Inside baseball, sometimes that shit just happens. Life happens, ladies and gentlemen. So, it's just going to be us today. And it's weird. These episodes, the more and more they tend to pop up. And realistically, looking back on it, I think there's only been about five episodes, something like that. Maybe I feel like five is a good ballpark number that I'm like getting close to of these kind of one-on-one episodes that I just kind of get on here and ramble and do the show by myself. I've streamed before. I've done content creation for a decent amount of years now at this point. Done public speaking before and things like that. Like, I'm very comfortable just sitting down and bullshitting. Like, I think I've gotten to the point now where, and I think I've said this on shows before, but if you just come up to me with like a camera or a microphone or something like that with no prep time, I'd probably be good to go. Like, I would get through it and I would just like, whoa, what's up, Travis? You know, like, let's talk about this. I think at that point, I'm at that point, I should say, that I'm just so comfortable talking to you guys, just in general, those who listen to the show, those who watch my streams have read my, content as well, or interacted with any kind of creative outlet that I've done. One, thank you. But also, two, at the same time, like, I'm just, at this point, like, I kind of look forward to these episodes in a weird way. Like, not that I'd much rather, obviously, I'll be quite honest, I'd much rather just me and Mike or Adam or whoever, guest of the show, sit down and just talk and bullshit and have a good time. Like, that's obviously what I prefer. But I guess the point I'm trying to say is I don't shy away from these episodes because I really do think they give, I think sometimes the message of, sometimes of what I'm saying, Mike's saying, whoever, like, it sometimes can be hard to get opinions across whenever there's, or I shouldn't say that, to expand upon opinions, I should say. Like, I make sure we get our full thoughts out on stuff like that, whether they be good, bad, and different, Mike and I differentiating or whatever. I make sure that we have the room to do that, but this is much more, like, one-on-one personal. And I miss that with podcasting because I don't think there's always that one-on-one personal kind of, like, connotation you get with it or like presentation you get with it. Usually it is just, hey, it's a group of people, it's the meme you always see of like the person like by that billboard that has all the people sitting around like laughing around a campfire and then you being like, you know, it's like me listening to my favorite podcast, how I feel like I'm in the room with them or something. Like, that's what we want to emulate. We want to be, want you to be the listener, our, you know, third or fourth, however many we have on every week, to be there sitting in the chair with us, you know, down in the basement, in the game room, playing video games, growing up like we did, you know, like, just bullshitting with your buddies about video games, something that you're passionate about. Like, I want that to be the vibe we give off. And I hope we do that. But it is nice to, I think, do these personal one-on-ones sometimes, you know, obviously not all the time, but it is nice to kind of do that because it gives me that kind of like clarity, I guess, and that personal one-on-one that I feel like I'm kind of talking one-on-one to whoever's listening, to whoever's taking in our content this week, which I'm very appreciative of. So anywho, though, yeah, so it's just me this week. And I'm still spitballing ideas for what to call these. I want to find something there since I'm usually the one who's on every single week. I've never missed a week of this show. So, you know, I kind of want to find something to call these one-on-ones, but I digress. Anyways, I guess we can get into video games because that's the whole reason why you're here, obviously. things I've been playing this week. It's been a relatively light week for me video game-wise, which is crazy to think, I know. I've really only been playing Valorant for the most part. I know Mike and I talked about it last week on the show. We're both heavy into it. Mike's really heavy into it right now. And I'm kind of dipping my toe back into it. Just being one of those games that, you know, just like any online multiplayer, you know, especially competitive esports title, like, you know, especially FPSs tend to be that, you know, or shooters in general tend to fill that hole really well, that they fit the, cool, I have X amount of time in my schedule today, tomorrow, cool, I could play a couple games here, a couple games there, or whatever, you know, and Valorant CS, obviously, to CS, especially a game that, you know, is very near and dear to me, and a franchise very near and dear to me, you know, those type of round-based games can take quite a while if you're playing, you know, competitive or something like that. Even in, you know, Valorant, with when we're talking, you know, unrated or, you know, obviously ranked, you know, it can take a while, half hour at least, to play these games at minimum. So, you know, it does get a little harder from that end sometimes, but it is still that, hey, cool, I have this pocket of time, I can jump in and do this in and out and have an experience that is condensed and kind of bottled up into this one thing for once. And I've had a lot, I'll be honest, I've been working kind of getting myself back on track because of the honeymoon throwing us off, and still was doing stuff once I got back, and, you know, obviously beforehand, but trying to get back on course for my programming classes that I've been taking, and really kind of getting ahead on a lot of stuff, knowing that this weekend's going to be busy with work and whatnot, and I won't have a lot of time this weekend to do that. College athletics are back, baby. So it's really crazy week, but yeah, taking my courses in that and kind of getting ahead on some of the JavaScript stuff that I'm learning and all of that. But so Valorant's kind of been my one game that I've been playing. I've been dipping in and out of that. And realistically, there's been nights that I've been like sitting here that, you know, after my wife goes to bed and everything like that, and after I'm done studying and whatnot, because usually like I'll get home, I'll make dinner and we'll do whatever. My wife works out. The fuck, you think I work out? No, fuck. That's my, hey, I got about like an hour and a half or so that I could play a couple of quick things, you know, get that early gaming session in for a little bit. And then, you know, go down and hang out with her, whether we play a game together or watch TV show. We're rewatching Game of Thrones naturally because, you know, House of the Dragon is just fucking incredible. So we're like, fuck, we gotta rewatch Game of Thrones. So we've been doing that. But then she goes to bed relatively early because she's a teacher. So I come up around 9 o'clock or so, and then I have my time in my office or down with the TV if I'm playing something on my console or whatever. But usually, typically, I'm coming up onto my PC, and that's where I'll put in a handful of hours playing something or whatever, you know, 2, 3, 4 hours, whatever the night may bring in terms of, you know, during the week kind of thing. But even then, it's been mostly Valorant. Like, I haven't had that. I've been looking at, like, man, I want to pick up something again, but nothing's really like scratching that itch. I want to kind of do a replay of Jedi Fallen Order now that I picked that up on PC, playing it on console originally back in the day. You know, there's been games that have kind of stuck out that I'm like, fuck, I kind of want to do another run of this, or, you know, dive into this for the first time, or yada yada. Elden Ring, I want to go back. I take it back. I need to finish Elden Ring for Game of the Year. It's in my top games of the year, obviously, already, if you have been listening to the show at all. But I want to get back in. I've never finished it. I put 60 hours into the game and just, you know, fell off because something else was coming up. I kind of hit a roadblock too, that I knew I'd have to grind a little bit for, but it's an incredible game that I just want to get back and finish. I've never finished a Souls-like game. I put probably, let's see, between, I think it was like 20 hours into Sekiro, so giving it a very honest chance, put 60 hours or so into Dark Souls Remastered, haven't finished that, but got very far into it. You know, I'd say 3/4 of the way through, and just kind of, it's one of those games I pick at, you know, over and over, just trying to, you know, I'll drop it, come back to it, yada, yada. And that's kind of seeming what Elden Ring's going to be like, but it's one of those games I want to get back and finish because I know how well I resonate with it and how immaculately paced and crafted that game is. It's so meticulous that it really is one of those games that, you know, I always talk about, especially too, as a 29-year-old man who is now married and, you know, probably going to have kids in a handful of years, like, works full time. Like, I'm taking classes after, like, I'm personally, gaming is a passion of mine, and the medium that is gaming will always be a passion of mine, not just a hobby. So I will go out of my way to make sure I make time for it, you know, probably almost every day, because that's what I'm passionate about. And that's why I get, you know, that self fulfillment out of, I guess, like, from my hobbies. But the big thing too, that I think I really started focusing on probably around maybe 25 or so, so maybe 4 or 5 years ago, something like that, is really focusing on and paying attention to the way something is paced, but more so in the time of, and as I've gotten kind of, you know, wise to game design and things like that and learned about the industry more and gotten more in depth with it, and even now trying to learn to code and things like that, and, you know, taking classes in 3D modeling and, you know, all these things that kind of help me learn the space that is game development. Like, I look for more the how games are designed in the sense of, does this game, and this isn't a, it sounds negative, but it's not, does this game waste my time at all? And in the sense, like, I always think God of War 2018 is a perfect example. Everything in that game that is, everything in there has a purpose. Everything that you do has a purpose. Everything, you're not just doing things to do things. Everything you do is to build towards something or work towards something or lean into something or help you achieve something that connects to something else. There is progress at everything you do in there, where there's a sense of accomplishment. There's a sense of yearning to push forward, that I truly feel that game does not waste your time at all. Everything has a purpose in it. And I seem to resonate so much more with so many games that do that. And especially, like, I think a lot about, like, Uncharted 4 is one of my favorite games. I know, PlayStation game, but stick with me. One of those games that truly I feel is a perfect end to Nathan Drake's story and really doesn't, like, I personally don't feel that really has any pause in it where I'm like, shit, I'm wasting my time here, or shit, this feels like it's taking forever, or yada yada. Like, even games like The Last of Us Part 2, that I think is a masterclass video game and a true piece of art, there is an area in, you know, an area in there that I would shave off, like, you know, that I think bogs down the story and is kind of a little condensed and kind of lean, takes away from the narrative that's going on right now and kind of doesn't reward you as much, you know. And there's little things like that that I would, like, you know, I look at games like Assassin's Creed, like, very open-ended, the new iteration of Assassin's Creed, but, like, look at that, and very, you know, open-ended gameplay now and very open world RPG elements. There's so much of that game that you could trim out and take from a 50-hour experience to a 30-hour experience and fucking chef's kiss. That shit would be just fucking fire. Like, it can't be every game, but Elden Ring, I think, really does carry on that trend. And for the most part, Soulsborne games have done, especially FromSoft's Soulsborne, you know, quote-unquote genre that they've defined, they always do the best. It seems like their iterations of that genre tend to really focus in on that and get better and better each time they move on, that you've seen it. And I think Elden Ring really is the culmination of all that work to get something like this, that every piece within there really isn't fodder. It's not a copy and paste dungeon. It's not, you know, just another boss, just a different shade of color, and he has a different buff and a different, like, things like that. That it isn't that. Like, I feel that everything I do in there is pushing me forward in some positive way that I can just look on the map and be like, you know what? I just kind of want to go in this direction and check out this area, because I know in whatever I do in there, there's a reason why that is there on the map, and there's a reason for me to go there. And I think that's really special. So getting really off track on that, but I do want to get back there and play that. And fuck, I might jump into that this weekend. Who knows? Who knows? But yes, a long-winded thing. There's many games I want to get back to that I just haven't had that time. Like, I sit there, I'll look at my Steam library and be like, fuck, I kind of want to play that. I don't know. Do I want to start that? I don't know. Like, there's multiple things that I'm like, yes, I want to start. But I have a limited amount of time right now. It's getting crazy with work right now. And yes, probably next week and on, you know, I'll be able to budget my time a little bit better. And, you know, I'll have much more time to just play 5 hours of video games a day, or make that happen if I really want to, you know, like, and well, and I'll have weekend and stuff like that. You get what I mean? But point being, like, I think there's just so many that I want to play in so little time, and so many things that I want to make sure the experience that I'm getting, you know, obviously is worth my time. And the problem is there's so much good shit that's being put out right now that is worth my time. I want to check out the new season of Destiny. I've been itching to try out The Division 2 again. The Division 2, a game that, like, isn't really getting updated too often anymore. Like, I've even had, like, remote, and we're going to get into it, because I'm not all gloom and doom like Mike. So, you know, that's the one nice thing about these. I'm not so gloom and doom like Mike, that I'm more of a glass half full, I like to think. But I even have a tad bit of an itch to get back into Halo Infinite with some of the content that they're, at least on the roadmap they're putting out, and obviously with Forge and whatnot, but we got a bone to pick with 343, naturally, in a little bit, obviously, if you're seeing the title of the show, but you get my point. But yes, in terms of what I've been playing, mostly Valorant. Long, long-winded answer for that, but mostly Valorant. That I'm sure I'll wear off from that, and, you know, I can already see it coming, where it's just like, you know what, I need a break from this, I've been playing this too much, like, this is the only game I've been playing, yada yada, and for good reason, I'm enjoying it, obviously. And playing with Mike and Adam and, you know, our buddies and whatnot. Like, just getting into a voice chat, and even if it's just dicking around, like, we're having a good time kind of thing. But there are other things I do want to play. It's just that, man, I want to start this. Man, I want to start that. Oh, you know what? That sounds good, too. Like, what do I want to... And eventually, once I rip the Band-Aid off and choose something, I'm sure it's my OCD that's just making me fucking do this. Like, once I do that, and once I jump into it, and once I'm, you know, my work schedule is not as crazy after this week, a little bit at least, be relatively normal, and, you know, I'm caught up on some classwork and things like that, like, then I'll be able to be like, okay, well, I could throw a handful of hours into this game and just, or tonight, and be like, eh, whatever, I just won't play it, you know, I'm gonna back out of this, play something else for a little bit tonight, and then, you know, the next night, just be like, ah, fuck, I don't want to play that anymore, and just move on to something else. Like, I don't feel like, fuck, I only had X amount of time today to play video games. It's kind of that pressure. And that might just be my OCD fucking talking. And, you know, you get me. If you've been listening to the show long enough, you get me. Anywho, jump into the meat of our show, because we got a handful of things to talk about. And like I said, there is one thing that we really got to talk about. If you're seeing the title of the show, the bigger thing I want to say, probably from what most in terms of the world of Xbox has been really announced this week. And this is hot off the press. This is today. This is coming out. Halo Infinite Forge Mode gets November release date, but split-screen co-op is canceled. That is right. The staple. Well, I should say, the return of a staple within the Halo franchise. Taking a break in Halo 5, but was confirmed originally when Halo Infinite first was shown at E3 2018 and everything after that, boom, hey, co-op, split screen co-op, you know, couch co-op is going to be a thing in this game. You are going to be able to play it. It's canceled now. Yes, it is officially canceled. The final release of online co-op, though, is coming in November. We got a really good write-up from Ryan Leston over at IGN here, kind of wrapping it all up and kind of rounding up the roadmap that 343 put out earlier today. I'm recording this. I almost said we. It's just me. But I'm recording this on Thursday, so this just came out today. But kind of outlaying their fall and winter roadmap to kind of give us, you know, on the back nine of the year, what we can expect from, what we can expect really from, actually, I want to say, November to March. They even have some June laid out there. It's, yeah, kind of crazy. So with that being said, let's jump into it. Like I said, link in the description for Ryan's article over at IGN. Halo Infinite is finally getting Forge mode, launching on November 8th, 2022, and the full release of online campaign co-op will now arrive on the same day. Sadly, though, split-screen co-op has been canceled entirely. In a new update, developer 343 announced details of its winter update coming on November 8th, which comes with some long-awaited modes. Forge mode will allow Halo Infinite fans to essentially create their own content, building new maps with the sophisticated editor and sharing them amongst the community. Arriving as a beta, we're still not totally sure on included features, although there are multiple leaks out there that make it look pretty impressive. I saw somebody who's gotten kind of the leaked version of this, or, you know, beta tested it. I can't remember how exactly they were able to get it. I don't know if they data mined through it or what, but people have been playing around with Forge, and the one that really like stuck out that was like, holy shit, fuck yes, let's go, was somebody is recreating Andy's room from Toy Story. Yeah, with a fully like functioning physics-based Jenga game that's in there. Like, it looks fucking dope. I'm so excited for just what the community is going to be able to, you know, make in Forge because of all the history that we've had with Forge for so long and how impressive, you know, some of the things that have come out with Forge just over the years. You know, I'm super excited about it. Anywho, though, 343 Industries is also launching two new multiplayer maps on November 8th, which will showcase exactly what Forge can do, as they were made entirely in Forge. The winter update also sees the full version of online campaign co-op finally roll out to all players, allowing you to team up with your buddies and tackle Halo Infinite's campaign together. Expect to find new achievements, cross-platform support, mission replay, and shared progress. After several delays and a beta, it's been a long time coming. However, though, there's bad news for fans of couch co-op. The local split-screen co-op mode has now been canceled. It's a blow to those who have been waiting since launch for the old-school feature, but it's seemingly a matter of priorities. Quote, in order to improve and accelerate ongoing live service development and to better address player feedback and quality of life updates, we have allocated studio resources and are no longer working on local campaign split-screen co-op, said 343 Industries. Alongside these new additions, the winter update will include the Match XP beta, allowing players to level up alongside the 30-level battle pass. There's also a new game mode, Covert One Flag, which features asymmetrical loadouts and round-based gameplay, just to mix it up a bit. There's certainly a lot of new content on its way, and Forge could be the answer to Halo Infinite's content drought. For now, we'll have to wait and see, but let's hope the community gets really creative with this. So, like I said, great write-up by Ryan over there. Go give him a click and whatnot. There's a lot of good in here, I think. And I've been somebody who's been very critical of 343 and Halo Infinite and how the direction of this game. And obviously, I don't think as critical as Mike, though. And I'm sure he'll have all his opinions and whatnot on where we're going with this and whatnot next week. As, you know, knowing him, he won't shy away from it. But for me, though, there's a lot of good content in there. That being said, it still sucks that we're losing this. Yes, I understand that. In all intents and purposes, in the world of video games, at 29, I'm starting to enter the boomer age. I get it. I fucking get it. All right. I have the memories of sitting down to play Halo 1, Halo 2, Halo 3, you know, really even Halo 4, right? ODST, Reach, like playing couch co-op with my friends through these games, being a staple of Halo. Now, granted, two, also playing Halo 3, you know, online co-op, and every other Halo online co-op, you know, being able to do that, that's been totally fine. And same with, you know, Infinite. Like, I'm excited to do co-op online. But I also was excited to have something to play with my wife, who isn't somebody who's big on shooters. You know, somebody that I, or something that, you know, it's a franchise I'm really fond of, and somebody who was very, I think, very high. I think when I look back on my review of Halo Infinite's campaign, I think back of the game pretty fondly. Sure, wasn't what I, you know, it wasn't all that I wanted, and it's very, It's very lacking in the content still, but I thought what we did get was good. I liked it. I thought it was a, you know, solid 8.5, if not higher, experience that I think would be fun to play co-op with somebody, especially on my couch, that I could, you know, my wife can take one controller and I could take the other, and I could, you know, she's not that experienced with shooters, so cool. I can put it on easy and have us play through with it, you know, and it's fun. Just playing, even playing with the physics of that open sandbox world with the physics of the grappling hook, like things like that. That's just fucking fun to go and play. Like, so I was looking forward to sitting down and doing that. But I understand. I completely understand that we're looking at a feature that probably, I don't even know really percentage wise, probably what you would put on that. Like, I wonder if there's a reset era. Like, I was hoping that there would be a reset area or reset era, like, what am I, like, poll that somebody put up of, like, do you actually play, would you have actually played couch co-op, like, kind of thing. But it's, I would have to say it's probably, you know, at this point, 10% of people probably playing it. Like, I feel like my gut kind of goes to that. Maybe it's a little higher. But realistically, we're not going to be seeing the same thing that we saw with previous Halo titles. We're just not. And that sucks. But at the same time, too, you know, that experience of, you know, going over to your buddy's house and bringing your controller and, dude, Halo 3 is launching tonight. We got to play through it all night. Like, just stay up and play through it. You know, that experience, sure, is still there for kids at times. But, you know, at the same time, too, I'm cognitive enough to know that, hey, now kids are just grouping up and playing, like, and I should say people in general, my friends and I, granted, when we come back on holidays and stuff like that, we make sure to get together and, you know, or somebody's coming into town for the weekend, we make sure to get together, you know, bring a couple controllers, play some games, drink some beers, whatever, you know, like stuff like that. But at the same time, too, I know that our time we could spend together while people are spread out across the country now, like, I can, if we want to hang out, the easiest way to do it is hop on, you know, a couple times a week at night and play video games together. Like, we could do that. And that the party system has become the new, you know, basement to play video games in growing up. Like, kids are going and doing that now. Like, that experience now, instead of all your buddies come over, it's, oh, make sure you got it pre-installed, the game pre-installed, ready to go at midnight so then we could start playing in an online co-op. And that's okay. Like, I'm totally fine with those experiences because I've had a lot of great experiences on that end as well. But at the same time, too, I think it just comes down to, keeps coming back to the idea of this game's scale and scope and vision clearly changed too many times, clearly had too many indecisive decisions, or there were too many indecisive moments with its development. And it's clear that the leadership issues were impactful, or the leadership changes that we did see were very much impactful. I was also on, you know, I was one of the people, hey, in the camp of, listen, we need to remember at the end of the day, yes, video games are art, video games are fun, video games are meant to be, you know, are a big deal, and I think they need to be taken important for what they are, being something that I think of it almost as a liquid that really can form to fit pretty much anything you put it in, where there are, I believe esports is athletics. I believe that video games are art. I believe that you could tell some of the most impactful storytelling and narrative moments through the eyes of video games compared to anywhere else, any other medium, because of the interactive, like the ability to interact with it and touch and feel and move and, you know, interact with the art that you're, you know, experiencing. But at the same time, too, I'm also cognitive enough, and I'd like to say that, like to think that, you know, hey, these are people who make these. They're not robots, at least not yet. You know, an AI didn't make this. This is somebody who just literally has a wife, has kids, has a house, who, hey, maybe wanted to make more money. Hey, maybe wanted to not crunch and maybe going to this studio to do something else or work on this project more fits their skill set. And also, too, maybe just buys them more time with their family or more time to play games, have a life. You know, we were not meant to live, work, and die. Like, that's just, you know, we weren't. So there comes a time where it's like, yeah, whenever those changes were going on, sure. I mean, people also, you know, can just get new jobs. It's just like any other industry. You can get a new job in the middle of game development. But that also sometimes isn't the case. And I think now it's clear that there were, whether it's issues between Microsoft and 343 or the higher level management of 343 or, you know, like I said, Microsoft from their publishing end and really kind of pushing where X, Y, and Z needs to be done with this game, or vice versa, Microsoft giving more of a, hey, we kind of want these traditional features and this and that, and 343 maybe wanting to go in a different direction. Who knows? I'm not on the team. I wouldn't know. But just looking from the outside and looking from what we got, I mean, I was even talking to Mike there, like in our group chat, telling Mike, like when this first dropped, saying like, you know, I had to just laugh. I was like, they canceled Couch Co-op. Like, and, you know, the first thing I said is there's no way this game any earlier shouldn't have, or this, there's no way realistically this game should have ever launched earlier than fall or holiday of 2022. So this holiday coming up. I think if that game would have launched at this time this year or later, we would have been talking very differently about this game. We would have had a fully fledged package of this game. And I think because I like to think because, hey, this game is free to play. Hey, this game has, you know, X, Y, and Z with it. You can get in for the cost, or the barrier to entry is super low in this time around with Halo. You don't even have to play the campaign if you don't want to. It's there if you want to buy it. Sure, great, support it. We'd love you to do that. Same with Game Pass. It's on Game Pass. Cool, that's great. But at the end of the day, multiplayer is the experience people are going to be hanging around the longest with Halo, and knowing that they are free to play and them wanting more reasons for people to continuously come back, I'm sure there was discussions of, cool, we can boot this down the road. Let's make sure this comes out when it's good and ready and exactly how we want it to come out and yada, yada. You get what I mean? That they want to make sure the polish is good on it and this and that. That's all well and good, but at the same time, too, sure, that's a whole nother year of development you're looking at now. And that's more added cost and, you know, all of this stuff that goes into it. But we're already talking about a video game that, from what it sounded like, is probably going to go down as the most expensive video game ever developed. At that point, it's like, well, the wheels are off already. You know, we're already this invested into it. It just sucked to see where this game came out from and how much fucking fun it was. I mean, this game was so fucking fun at launch. It still is a fun game, but it's just, it's hard not to just be critical of it. Like, it really isn't. And it really begs the question of, and I've been somebody who has been, hey, this is 343 coming in. They're trying to catch lightning in a bottle continuously with somebody else's franchise. That doesn't always happen. You can't expect that to always happen. You can't. At the same time, though, I think it is completely fair to start looking at this franchise and this developer and saying, shit, does this work? Now, do I think we'll ever see truly the hands change of this franchise? Who the fuck knows? If I was betting, I probably wouldn't, or at least wouldn't expect it anytime soon, obviously, but at what point? It's not 2007 and Bungie going out on their own and 343 looking and saying, fuck, what do we do next? Like, how do we get to Halo? You know, we want to keep this IP rolling, you know, just because our holy grail of a developer, you know, our crown jewel and our first party catalog, our development studios is moving on to do their own thing now. And find a new partner to, you know, fund their project. You know, we want to keep this going. Okay, well, internally, let's make it happen. You know, we'll start up a new studio and build that up. And it's all fine and well. And that thought is great, because you do have a lot of long-term Bungie original, you know, Bungie employees and, you know, tentpoles of that, you know, development team. But at the same time, too, like, it's so tough to really look at this franchise and just say, and look at this, where this franchise has gone in the last 10 years and say, like, yes, this is working. I just don't think you could say that anymore. Yeah, Halo will always be, until at this point now, in terms of native, how do I want to put this? Like, native, original, first-party IP to come from internally from Microsoft kind of thing, Halo is always going to be that crown jewel. Now, in terms of popularity, sure. Knock on wood, everything goes right, as somebody who is an Xbox fan, somebody who, you know, it would make for better content, obviously, to cover them with if the Activision deal goes through, which last week I was talking about. I think there's no way that it doesn't. But, and I stand by that, even with, you know, more stuff going on, you know, half the people approve it. There's more stuff going on with it, but once again, totally think it's still going to go through. But sure, you're going to have Call of Duty. You're going to have, you know, Fallout, Elder Scrolls, all these big IP to come in now, you know, post, well, you get what I'm saying. Like, there's Bethesda, you know, already here with Fallout and Elder Scrolls. And then you're bringing in now Activision with Call of Duty and Blizzard, not to mention with Warcraft and Diablo and Overwatch, all these things coming in that are going to be first party titles, and especially on Game Pass, like we're going to talk about in a little bit. But like, to me, when you think about Xbox IP, Halo's it. And to think this is where the franchise has gone, it's just, I just find it hard to look at it now. And this is somebody who fucking adores this franchise, man. I have so much just heart and soul and love for Halo. Like, very, you know, kind of impressionable experiences within my gaming history come from Halo that make me not only the fan of, you know, video games that I am today and the fan of the series, but somebody who's a fan of sci-fi, somebody who's a fan of cinematic storytelling within video games. So, like, Halo played into a lot of this. Somebody who's one of the major reasons why I love just playing, you know, online shooters, like, playing games online in general, like, because of Xbox Live and Halo 2, then into Halo 3. Like, that's just, that defined a lot of my childhood and things like that. Like, I will always have heart for this franchise, and I will always give it a try, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to be critical of it. And to me right now, sure, there's a lot of good stuff in here, but a lot of core content that we should have been getting. If this game was truly releasing last year, this is when we should have got it. But I still am in the camp. This game should not have released last year. The fact that, sure, we got the quote-unquote beta multiplayer experience out, you know, almost a month before campaign launched, and then truly the game coming out December, whatever it was, 10th or something like that. But the fact that this franchise came out, you know, or this product came out very much staggered and in the shape that it did, it just... And it's clear the campaign obviously was the biggest hurdle that they had to face. Multiplayer, you know, has obviously been the tentpole experience where they built out and, you know, clearly started, at least from what I have seen and heard and whatnot, built out around multiplayer and then obviously campaign and whatnot. And campaign has been their biggest headache with this project. And it's a new venture for them, going into not only open world with Halo for the first time, you know, and granted having these large expansive levels before, but nowhere near what they needed to do for open world, that level of experience. So something new for that studio to dive into, not to mention RPG mechanics as well. Like, it's, there's a lot of different, you know, systems that are working with this that it takes time. It takes a lot of things. It's understandable. But that's where Microsoft, who have the deep, 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 deep pockets, step in and say, take as long as you fucking need to make this game. Like, if it needs to come out in 2022, let it come out in 2022. Let's play it in 2022. Let's get a full experience out, because, like I've said so many times on the show, you get one first impression with anything you do, anything creative, anything you do in life, really, but talking in this medium, you get one first impression. One. You can never have another first impression again. You could revamp yourself and, you know, reboot and things like that, but you have one first impression with everything you do. They can't put the toothpaste back in the bottle. So, yeah, it's to make the best you can and whatnot. Like I said, a lot of good content that I like here that gets me interested. I'm super excited to see what comes out of the Forge beta, just playing Forge in general. You know, there's new big team maps that are coming out, and, you know, I'm excited for getting a new competitive map. I actually think the Shroud screen that's coming out, you know, next year, it seems like at this point, like basically putting smokes in Halo, that's really dope. That'd be really fun to play. And I'm really excited about just how they're, you know, changing up matchmaking, XP, and things like that. Like, there's a lot of good things to come from there. But a lot of these basis things, like Forge, like co-op campaign, it's just, this game should have came out this year, if not later. They just, in all honesty, and granted, things change, plans change, yada yada, this game should have never been announced in 2018. They needed something, obviously, to show in 2018. I thought 2018 for Xbox, in terms of their E3, was fucking phenomenal. One of my favorite E3s from them. But point being, we probably shouldn't have seen anything for that. For the fact that we didn't see gameplay the following year, and a whole nother year went by that we saw gameplay that received a lot of backlash and then was delayed. Like, it just should have been, that game should have never seen the light of day in 2018. 2019, sure, give that teaser. You know, but like I said, genie's out of the bottle. So I'm still hopeful for the Halo franchise. I'm always going to be hopeful for the Halo franchise. That just may be the, you know, romantic in me with this thing, that this IP that I love. You know, so who knows? We'll see. But at the end of the day, I think people are very valid in their ability to say, hey, I don't necessarily have a lot of faith in 343 to handle this franchise moving forward. That's just me. And I'm somebody who is always and always will be pro-dev and pro-workers' rights. So I'm talking about crunch and everything like that, everything that goes into it. And I will always be, no matter what, people have worked on this game. People have put their blood, sweat, and tears into this project. And knowing how game development can be, probably missed out on a lot of life things to get this game out, even in the state it was in. And that I will always have sympathy for. I will always be fair and honest, and, you know, that will always be in my, you know, I will always tell by that to also say, this is still somebody's project that they worked on, and it's not complete dog shit, blah, 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 blah. Like, I'm not going to punch down, you know, that's just not me personally. But at the same time, that doesn't also mean I'm not going to be critical. And to see what this franchise has been doing for the past 10 years, for what we have now, I think it's fair for people to have that criticism of lost faith, to say the least. So, anywho, got a couple more stories, so let's move on. Let's talk about Assassin's Creed, because I kind of brought that up earlier. We now have an official announcement that, yes, Assassin's Creed Mirage is real, and Ubisoft has more to share about it next week. That's right, next week is Ubisoft Forward, so we're going to be hearing more about that. This comes from Wesley LeBlanc over at Game Informer. Wesley does a great job over there at Game Informer. And previously at IGN and stuff, we pull from his articles a lot. Great write-up over at Game Informer. As always, link in the description. So, after growing to become one of the most leaked games in franchise history, Ubisoft has confirmed that Assassin's Creed Mirage is real, and we'll be learning more about it next week. That's because the publisher is hosting a Ubisoft Forward on September 10th at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, which has been previously advertised as the event where we'll learn more about the future of Assassin's Creed and more. It seems Assassin's Creed Mirage will be the big highlight of the show, but it's possible we learn more about Assassin's Creed Infinity, which is Ubisoft's in-development Assassin's Creed live service platform. We might even learn about non-Assassin's Creed games, too. A lot of Assassin's Creed in there. If rumors and leaks about Assassin's Creed Mirage are correct, we're in for a game set in Baghdad with Bazem, a major character from Assassin's Creed Valhalla, if you know, you know, as the protagonist. Leaks indicate that he is not yet an assassin at this stage of Mirage, and instead a thief who comes to discover the Hidden Ones, which later become the Assassin's Order in the series. Rumors also point to this game being a much more stripped back tale on the franchise, or take on the franchise, feeling more like older games in the series rather than the massive and sprawling open world RPGs of late. The potential for this to feel like a bridge between classic Assassin's Creed and new Assassin's Creed has me incredibly excited. I love the new games, especially Origins and Odyssey, but they're downright exhausting. Assassin's Creed game that I could beat in less than 80 hours, sign me up. Wesley and I share a same similar thought on that one, as I was talking about earlier. So, yes, Assassin's Creed Mirage. New Assassin's Creed game. Shocker. We're getting another Assassin's Creed game. Who would have thought? But not Infinity, so... It's also interesting to think about, Wesley brought that up in the article, that, you know, there's a chance we learn more about Infinity 2, their live service platform for Assassin's Creed that's coming out, you know, within the future, in the next couple of years, I would imagine, that I'm curious if this plays into this at all. And just really in general, what Assassin's Creed is at this point. I think for a while, you know, it obviously was becoming this annualized, you know, franchise that was coming out once every year and kind of pulling the Call of Duty, rotating from multiple studios within the Ubisoft umbrella, you know, and coming out, you know, making sure there's one every holiday to come out. And people clearly got burnt out for that. Took that extra year off. They moved, you know, they staggered it, took a year off from Assassin's Creed, came back the following year in 2017 with Origins, and it blew people out of the water. Like, it was fucking great. Origins, huge fan of Origins. I think long term have connected the most with Origins compared to Odyssey and Valhalla. Valhalla is one that I just need to go back and beat. I've never beaten. I've just kind of really not put a lot of time into it, not because it's bad. And I would think out of all three of between Origins, Odyssey and Valhalla, Valhalla would be the one I connect most with, because I love the Norse mythology and Vikings and things like that. Like, that to me is really interesting. So I'm just shocked I haven't gotten into that. But even compared to, you know, Origins to Odyssey, like, I think long-term Origins sticks the most with me, and I have the most fond, or I have the fonder feelings for Origin and memories long-term, I think. But anywho, I'm interested to see how this all kind of connects, because clearly Ubisoft thinks, hey, there is room for not only the new iteration of Assassin's Creed that clearly people wanted and, you know, needed a break from the more linear experiences that we were giving them, to also now at the same time them also being like, well, no, these are kind of too long now. It reminds me of that episode of Courage the Cowardly Dog, with where Miriam is a little girl again and she's like, more macaroni, no, too much macaroni, more cheese, you know, like that kind of argument. So it's it's damned if you do, damned if you don't, to a degree. But I also agree with both sides of it. Like, I'm kind of, you know, on the fence on this one. That, sure, like, I personally, I think I've never totally identified with Assassin's Creed outside of, I think it was two that I played back in the day that I beat. One or two, I can't remember. That I was really into, really like it, dug it, and then never came back to Assassin's Creed, really, until pretty much Origins, because so many people are talking about it. I was like, all right, fuck it, I'll give it a try, and then I was hooked on it. I remember that was my bridge, RPG game leading up to God of War in 2018, that I was like, you know, it was one of those things that I remember. I was like, you know what, I probably have time for like one meaty game before, you know, between like the month leading into, or a couple weeks leading into God of War or whatever. I was like, I probably have a handful of, you know, I probably have enough time to get through one meaty game, like open world game, before then, with how I play open world games, that is, you know, pretty expansive. That I was like, I probably have enough for this. And I remember just getting done with that right before God of War, because I was like, as soon as God of War comes out, I'm fucking done. Like, I'm just going to be playing that. You know, like, that, there's no chance in hell I don't play that game on day one, you know, kind of thing. So, anywho, though, I am really curious to see how this all kind of intermingles, because it's clear that I think Ubisoft thinks, and from what it looks like, their fans think, that there is kind of room for both. Almost like the Resident Evil mindset, where Capcom seems very comfortable with saying, hey, yeah, we're going to have multiple streams of Resident Evil for you. We have the, you know, new iteration of what Resident Evil is, first person horror, you know, or, you know, however you want to call it, that's in the vein of games like, you know, Outlast and survival horror, but much more first person, you know, what is it, Amnesia, and things like that, that most modern horror games are finding success with. You know, we're going and evolving in that direction. This is our new mainline vision right now. You know, we'll see where it goes from here, but this is the vision for right now that we're going with and finding success with 7 and 8. But they're also cognitive enough of, you know, people like that traditional survival horror experience and want new modern iterations of that. So they're cool with giving, you know, they have the stream of remakes with Remake 2 being, or Resident Evil 2 Remake, and, you know, being incredibly successful. And, you know, Resident Evil 3 Remake being, you know, still being somewhat successful, but obviously not as critically heralded. But then also to, you know, RE4 coming out, like RE4 Remake coming out in the spring. Like, it's clear that they have enough bandwidth for that. And Mike and I think even did an episode on it a while back, that, you know, is that the case that we can, you know, this franchise can kind of handle all that? And it's clear that they can. And I think Assassin's Creed really kind of has that. What we get out of this game, you know, to what degree do we get it out? And, you know, how much emphasis is put on this? What studio within Ubisoft is actually working on this one? You know, things like that that we kind of need to focus on. You know, I would like to see, you know, maybe more of the studios who have handled Odyssey and Origins kind of focus on whatever the, you know, which I'm sure the open world nature or the open world RPG iterations of Assassin's Creed that we've been getting are probably going to be more ingrained with Assassin's Creed Infinity, at least what I'd like to think. So at the same time, I'm hoping the studios that worked on them, you know, are the ones that are kind of focusing on that. But at the same time, too, there's a lot of good out of Ubisoft still. I've been very critical of Ubisoft. That doesn't mean there's not talent there. That doesn't mean that this still can't, Mirage still can't be successful, even though that's not the Assassin's Creed that I connect with most. And it's just like, you know, Resident Evil. I connect more with, I think, the first person experiences that they're putting out with now than the third person. You know, over the shoulder, survival horror, traditional, you know, especially the compared to the original isometric ones. Point being, though, or lock camera, I should say, with tank controls and everything like that. But I think there's enough room for both those streams to kind of exist. You know, like I said, what we get from Mirage, the quality we get, you know, how this game is critically received, who knows? But I think long term, this franchise has enough to say, cool, we're going in this direction. We're going in this direction with multiple streams. And I think that can be successful. I really do. And I think that Assassin's Creed has the lore and the back history and lineage to really kind of carry that, and so much to pull from, so many arrows to pull from. We still haven't entered feudal Japan yet from what, you know, so many people have wanted for a long time, and, you know, kind of fans who wanted that and fan, you know, people who, you know, like me, also play PlayStation on that platform as well, got that with Ghost of Tsushima kind of. But at the same time, people are also like, you know, we want that. We want the Assassin's Creed, you know, shroud wrapped around it. Like, we want to be able to see that. I want to cover myself in the blanket of Assassin's Creed while playing this kind of experience. So, you know, I think at this point, we're going to now see that in Assassin's Creed Infinity. I think that's going to be now lock it in at this point, because if anything, Mirage probably was the opportunity to do that, if they wanted to keep it light, but I think that's such a big undertaking that they didn't want to keep it light. They wanted to make that, you know, a big deal. So who knows? And I think they want to make that expansive. So we'll see. But yeah, I'm pretty excited about this. I don't know how much I'm going to be into the more linear iterations of Assassin's Creed, because I haven't in the past comparative to the newer open world RPGs. But at the same time, too, I'm also very much in the case of, hey, cool, I'm going to be able to play an Assassin's Creed game that doesn't take me 50 to 80 hours to play. That's awesome. So I am looking forward to this. I am looking forward to seeing what Ubisoft's cooked up with Assassin's Creed. But anywho, let's head into our last news article for the day, last news topic. And it's one that's kind of short and wrapped up because we don't actually have the specifics yet. But I think it is important to kind of touch on because, you know, this has been a big point of contention. Not that too many people were thinking, hey, this isn't going to happen. More of a, more of a when, not if, but it's good to get confirmation that Call of Duty, Overwatch, and Diablo are coming indeed to Game Pass. Call of Duty will still hit on PlayStation on the same day, obviously, but though, you know, all of the Activision kind of tentpoles, the big IP that a lot of people are pointing to with this, are indeed coming to Game Pass. 100% will be. And that's confirmed by Phil Spencer. So a good write-up by Ian Harris over at Games Radar. As always, link in the description. Go over there, check out their work, and let's dig into it. Microsoft plans to add Call of Duty, Overwatch, and Diablo to its Game Pass subscription service. That comes from Microsoft Gaming CEO Phil Spencer, who confirms this much, or the much assumed news in a broader blog post today discussing the company's stance on the Activision Blizzard acquisition. Quote, "While we love consoles, we recognize that they are not always, are not the only way that people play games," Spencer said. "Today, the largest and fastest growing segment of gaming is mobile platforms. To reach the billions of players where they are and no matter what device they play on, we need to embrace choice. Giving players choice in how they play their games, making games more gaming more accessible, and leads to larger, more vibrant communities of players. Choice is equally important to developers. Developers benefit from having a diversity of distribution and business models for their games. Choice unlocks opportunity for innovation and enables the industry to go. While part of Microsoft's plan to extend choice to players is through cloud gaming streaming technologies for mobile, the other half relates to the Game Pass subscription model. As such, the goal is to include the trio of Activision Blizzard series in the service to, quote, grow the gaming communities as they'd be more accessible. Spencer also reiterates that Xbox is, quote, committed to making the same version of Call of Duty available on PlayStation on the same day the game launches elsewhere, which would include Game Pass. Spencer's blog post follows an announcement from a UK competition watchdog that Microsoft Activision's deal could lead to competition concerns, namely for Sony. The companies now have 5 days to submit proposals to alleviate those concerns. Otherwise, a second phase of investigation will commence. So, I think the bigger thing is, obviously, like I said, so many people were expecting, well, yeah, duh, of course they're coming to Game Pass. But like I said, much more of a when, not if. But I think this is more important to the extent of, in a bigger conversation could be having, I kind of want to holster that a little bit because I want to get Mike's opinion on that maybe next week and we can kind of dive back into this. But it's interesting to see where they're going and where Xbox is with exclusives. Because they are very vocal of, hey, we don't always want exclusives. We don't want this. We want people to play our games on any platform they want to, yada, yada, or have the widest reach, or yada, yada. But also, too, we do have games that are like Starfield that are now Xbox exclusives or console exclusives on Xbox. So, you know, it's interesting to think about the direction that they are going now. Like, and to be fair, Call of Duty, much bigger franchise than really anything Bethesda is putting out. Call of Duty reaches a much more broader gaming, consumer, I should say, than what Bethesda probably would be reaching. I think that's safe to say, to say the least. Call of Duty is one of the biggest entertainment IPs ever. But at the same time, too, you know, not saying Bethesda, if you're in gaming, you know who Bethesda is. If you're interested in games, I should say, for the most part, you at least know what Fallout is or Elder Scrolls is or, you know, whatever from Bethesda. That at the same time, it makes sense to also be have that mindset of you don't pay, you know, what was it, $6.5 or $7 billion to acquire Bethesda to not make, you know, to not keep it in your own playground kind of thing. Where at the same time, too, you don't spend 10 times that amount or whatever it was to acquire Activision Blizzard to not, you know, make some things exclusive or give some priority to your platform. Like, you just don't. And I used to be somewhat on the opposite end of that, of, like, there's too much money to, you know, they can make far much more money leaving Fallout and Elder Scrolls, you know, third parties and putting them on all platforms, yada, yada. But at the same time, too, I've kind of crossed the fence on that one. I've gone over and I very much see the idea around, well, they spent all this money. They are very much entitled to do that. And I think it is at the same time cognitive of them to also say, hey, Call of Duty is obviously still coming out on PlayStation. Granted, that's already a done deal. There's PlayStation exclusive content with that in terms of marketing deals and things like that that have been set up that we know of. We don't know exactly what, but things like that that are set up for the next couple years with Call of Duty. Obviously, they're going to honor those. But if and when this deal passes through, it's going to be more of the... It's going to be more of a, I think, conversation to have of what Call of Duty does. Because then who knows after that? By 2027, what does Call of Duty look like? Are we still playing Call of Duty? I'm sure we will play Call of Duty until the world implodes. But at the end of the day, it's going to be interesting more once kind of the dust settles, I think, more on this. And we look back on this deal. We're not kind of still freshly examining this, because we're not going to see the effects of this deal really, I think, until 3 to 5 years down the road. I think that's really going to where we're going to see Xbox at its, you know, quote unquote peak form, or what their idea of their peak form is. Sure, we should start to see those wheels churning, and we should start to see some of the fruits of that labor coming into effect now with Starfield and things like that. And hopefully soon, eventually with Avowed, with, Fable and Perfect Dark and all these titles that they have coming up and that are in the works, and these big, you know, first party title, Hellblade, you know, things like that that really are supposed to be these tentpole now franchises for Microsoft moving forward. You know, I think we see that vision of what Xbox really is by that point. You know, probably three to 5 years down the road. But we should start seeing the fruits of those labor. But in terms of Activision Blizzard, you know, I think it's important that they're very vocal about, you know, what they want out of this, especially right now. And that's why I think it is good for Phil to come out and say, you know, kind of while, you know, some of the investigating is still going on and kind of the back end, the inside baseball stuff on these deals is kind of getting ironed out from a legal standpoint, that it is important to kind of keep your, you know, at least I'm thinking of it, hey, if I'm in their shoes, I'm wanting to make sure that people understand that, yeah, we're still excited about this deal, and you should be excited about this deal. And yeah, we have all intents and purposes to make that happen, and we're going to bring these to Game Pass. And, you know, kind of, you know, you kind of want to leave that almost the James Woods, Reese's Pieces, like, from Family Guy, the, piece of candy. Like that line of drip feeding and kind of luring, like, yeah, we want to keep you on the line still with this. Like, you know, so it's important to talk to your consumers like that and give them the message that, yes, this is still happening. There's good things coming from this, especially we're bringing this all to Game Pass, like things like that, that, yeah, we figured that, but it's important to know and clarify. But it does raise up a really interesting question of not right this second of what exactly Microsoft's stance is on exclusives. But really, what's that going to look like when we're full bore? What's this going to look like whenever the Call of Duty deals aren't legally binding anymore? What's that going to look like whenever, you know, we get up and running in whatever the follow-up to, you know, hey, World of Warcraft finally gets a console port? You know, what's that going to look like? Overwatch 2, do we truly see that eventually come and go, you know, truly only being on Xbox, or Overwatch 3 or whatever at this point? You know, do we see that really being, you know, a console exclusive? It's interesting. And I think that's going to be more of the dust settles kind of thing. Like I said, a couple years after the fact, I want to see what that looks like when Xbox is really, I think, their full vision of we're up and running and we're banger after banger after banger after banger. You know, in theory, obviously. Yeah, I want the same with, I mean, and that's same with, you know, PlayStation. I want the same thing. I want banger after banger after banger, like they've been doing for years now, this past console, two console generations. Like, I want these, you know, hit after hit after hit after hit that I've been getting single player great experiences, just like PlayStation's been doing from Xbox as well, because I play on both. So, it's going to be an interesting kind of, it's going to be an interesting jaunt as we get there, and kind of journey as we kind of move towards there. But from what we now see, obviously Diablo 4, Overwatch 2, Call of Duty, they're coming to Game Pass. Like I said, it's interesting to think about, okay, what about Warcraft for Game Pass PC? Is that going to get you a subscription to WoW? Which I would be back into WoW. If that happened, I would actually play WoW again. It's just crazy thing. And I brought this up to Mike last week. The fact that I think it's so interesting, too, when you think about this, it hit me a few weeks ago. I'm like, we are in a state that we very much could see within the next 5 years, like World of Warcraft being on Steam, like an actual version of Steam. For how much Microsoft is down with putting their games on Steam, and same with now Bethesda, obviously, choosing to opt out of their own launcher. I don't think we'll ever get rid of the Battle.net launcher. But at the same time, too, I would not be shocked if we eventually see Overwatch and World of Warcraft and Diablo 4 and all of that on Steam. I it sounds crazy. I never would have thought I'd see that. But I also never thought I'd see Microsoft owning not only Bethesda, but also Activision and also Blizzard. So the fucking anything is possible, man. Fucking Kevin Garnett, baby. You know. Anywho, though, guys, I think that's going to do it for episode. I mean, that's kind of all I wanted to kind of talk about, kind of wrap everyone up with, and, you know, kind of bring to the table this week. Like I said, we'll be back to normal next week, Mike and I again. This was very much a kind of last minute thing that popped up for very good reasons, that obviously I don't want to talk about. But point being, we'll until, you know, certain people want to talk about it, but point being, we're gonna, you know, next week we'll be back to normal. All will be well in the world again. Mike and I will be bitching at each other back and forth like an old married couple, like we always do. We got to get Adam back on the show too. I was gonna try to get Adam on the show this week, but it just didn't work out with schedules and whatnot. I had stuff with work that I didn't get a chance to just even text and be like, oh, what are you doing? Which normally he's always like, yeah, and sure, I'll hop on, you know, but just with my work schedule and whatnot, today just was wonky and whatnot. So, anywho, though, guys, I think that's going to do it for our episode this week. And normally, this is where I ask Mike, and I had a brain fart. I was like, normally, I kick it over to Mike, tell people where they can find him. But you want to bring up what we talked about today to me, of course. Your host, as always, Travis White, a.k.a. Travelus on most internet platforms. You can do so at Travelus _ on Twitter. That's Travelus _. You can also find me streaming time to time on twitch.tv/Travelus_, same as Twitter. And if you want to play some video games with me, you can do so on Xbox Live, just regular old Travelus. That's Travelus, and pretty much any other platform you want to, Steam and whatnot. Same one. You can find me there, just Travelus. And this, ladies and gentlemen, has been your newest episode of the Game Pass Gamecast, your weekly go-to podcast for all things Xbox, Xbox Game Pass, and of course PC gaming, including news, rumors, and conversations around them damn good video games. You can catch new episodes of the show when they drop each and every Friday morning on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, and all other major podcast services. So be sure to subscribe to us, rate us, review us, all that jazz wherever you get a podcast at. And of course, follow us on Twitter at GPGC Podcast to stay up to date with everything regarding the show, video games like, and our dope giveaways. And with that being said, that's going to do it for episode this week. Thank you, everyone, so much for listening, sharing, and being a part of our growing community. Game on, wash your hands, listen to the doctors, Black Lives Matter. And we will see you next week.